Final hour. Take two. Action. DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. AJ Malesko, she has accepted Hal Gill's friend request, and they are friends.
So says who?
Well, is that true, though, you've accepted his friend request?
No, it's pending.
Oh, it's pending?
Oh.
Yep. Yeah, it's pending.
Wow. So we've got a development started here. So did something happen outdoors before you came indoors?
No. It's all good. It's unfortunately there's nothing that can at this point that would surprise me with him. So
that is a very true statement.
That's our guy though.
We were discussing Barry Trotz getting fired.
Yeah.
That was like
huge news coming out of Long Island.
Are you kidding me?
Me too. It totally blindsided me this morning. I saw the news. I did not call into the media availability because I'm here getting ready for this game tonight, but saw all the quotes and was very surprised to see it based on one tough year. But I actually thought Barry did a fantastic job with that crew, and especially looked down the stretch run. Tough start for them being on the road for October into November 20th was when their first home game was. Hit hard with COVID. I mean, there were a lot of things out of his control, but I thought if you look at basically February, March, their stretch run, how well they played. I was surprised to see that. I don't know all the details, so I don't know what was maybe some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Have to believe Lou has somebody in mind to take over. I don't know
who
that
Lou
might be.
Well, Lou said the players need another voice, but he hasn't talked to the players.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right. Yep.
Okay. All right, Lou, thank you.
Can I just ask on that? Where is Lane Lambert at this point in his career?
You know, I think that's there's been a lot of talk even before this. There's been talk about Lane getting a chance at being the bench boss somewhere, right? Whether he's applying outside, whether he gets to be a head coach somewhere, whether this is his opportunity. But if that's the case, is he really the different voice? Because he has been Barry Trotz's man. He's great, though. I mean, you know, players have a lot of respect for him. He's a fantastic guy.
Does he still have great hair?
He's got great hair.
Oh, yeah.
Great hair.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good
I mean, that
do you know about the hashtag Lambert Flow?
No.
When he was on the bench here?
Is there a Willie Flow hashtag, too?
I wish. I wish. Back in when I was playing for Vanderbilt, there could have been had there been Twitter at the time.
Okay.
But it was before Twitter.
That's
so, you know,
that's
just why it didn't happen. But every time they would show Lane Lambert on the bench, he would do an interview like the assistants do. And the hashtag would just go on the Twitter scroll, the Lambert Flow. Yeah. It didn't matter what he was saying.
Lambert Flow.
The Lambert Flow.
I like it. Okay, we'll have to bring that back to Long Island. No, it is interesting. You look at it, fits very much into the Lou Lamorello, like, you know, no facial hair, but you got, you know, you just look right every time you step out. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens if it's, because as far as I saw this morning, all the assistant coaches were still there and were not being let go. So I don't know.
Well, he will have suitors, not Ryan suitors, but he'll have suitors, Chicago, Winnipeg, Philadelphia, Detroit.
Detroit.
Maybe Vegas. I don't know what they're planning on doing there. But where do you think he jumps right back in the fray? And if he does, where would be a good landing spot?
Well, he's from Winnipeg, so that one does seem to make a lot of sense for him. If he wants to go back there, I know that he's still got family back in the area. Chicago, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about that, and Detroit as well. So, you know, I don't know whether he will jump back in. Whether I saw some speculation that he may want to get more into the management side of it too. So he's got, I think, 1 year left too. He's getting paid. So does he take a little time, decide where he's going to go? I can see him. You know, you look at the big markets, right? You look at Chicago. Would be a great gig for him. But then, heading home at this point, he's accomplished so much, right? I mean, what he did here in Nashville for this franchise, and then going and winning a cup in Washington. So he certainly has done a lot, and he's has a lot of respect around the league, I think, from a lot of the players. So I think he's in a position to write his own ticket.
AJ, coming into this series, I was really questioning, how is Colorado going to handle the pressure? The pressure's real. Like, they have to make a run. Not getting out of the first round, they have to make a run. Or I said, look, I don't know if Bednar's going to survive. Like, if they get put out early, I think they may decide it's time for a change of direction. Well, through three games, we've seen how they've handled the pressure of making a run. They've been pretty dominant in this series. What has been your takeaway through three games?
Yeah, they you know, it's interesting too, because you look at April. They sort of stumbled a little down the stretch. Right? And you never
coasting.
Know what that means. Yeah, were they coasting? Were they just waiting? And is there a switch that players can flip? That's always been a question, right? Do you have to play meaningful hockey up until the end in order to be battle ready and battle tested for the playoffs? And I think that for Colorado, they proved, you know, they get a lot of people back. They get Landeskog back for the playoffs, so there's an emotional lift when you have a player like that coming back in the lineup as well. They've been impressive. I mean, they're deep, they're fast, they're physical. Obviously, Kemper is a question mark, but he's been a great goaltender for them.
You said physical. I did not expect that this series, and they've been – I got to give it to them. They've been more physical than I thought.
Stood up to it.
I thought they
pretty
just
well.
Yeah, I just thought they wanted to, you know, skate really fast and show off their talent and just avoid all that stuff, but they haven't been afraid to mix it up a little.
No, that's always been something about Nathan MacKinnon that surprises me. Every time I call games, I'm like, he's so fast, he's so skilled, but he is not afraid to mix it up a little bit. He doesn't always have to because he can outskate most people. But I think the whole team, they do have a heaviness to them that, you know, maybe in the past they haven't been as willing or as able to jump into the fray or whatever it may be. You know, the big question mark is, you say deeper, not just get out of the first round. I think that there is motivation for them. If they look last year, they're sweep St. Louis, then they fall to Vegas, right? That's what you look, you go back to Tampa Bay in 2019, they get swept by Columbus, they come storming back, they win the last two cups. So they have these sort of moments in their history, a lot of these teams, where they've stumbled one year and their core remembers it. They use it as motivation. And we were just talking to Bednar, and he said that from training camp, we've been talking about when we lost to Vegas. They've used that as motivation all season long. So now they come into this, and they obviously are executing, right? And they came out flying in game one against you guys. Game two obviously was a much tighter game, ended up taking it in overtime. But looking at the way that the Preds played them in Game 3, I know it ended up being a little bit more lopsided, but it was a good, even matchup for a lot of the game from what I saw. I wasn't working that game, but watching it, and it was some momentum shifts, right? The goalie, the challenge that didn't work, and then the power play goals, and something, you know, I think power play was obviously the big thing. But I do think Colorado's been impressive, and Nashville has their hands full for Game 4.
We're talking to AJ Molesko from ESPN. So, AJ, you get to bounce around and do different games, different series. There's a couple trends I want to ask you about. One, which was a sore spot here, was the goaltender interference. There's been a bunch of them in the playoffs so far. I'm just curious, when you're the analyst and you have to try to make the call as they're going through it, how hard that is for you? Because as we know, it's really hard to nail down what exactly is or is not. And there's always going to be some of that, but it seems especially hard this year.
Yeah, and I think it is incredibly, and you know it, right? You're sitting out there, you're watching goaltender interference, and our job is, as an analyst, is to first guess, right? So we're supposed to sit there and give our opinion, and this is what we think. Almost every one of them is pretty much 50-50, because you don't know, it's so subjective. These refs are looking at it, they're talking to the off-ice officials, you've got the, you know, sometimes you have the Toronto War Room get involved, whatever it may be, but, you know, you go back to the Rangers-Pittsburgh game one, ended up going triple overtime, but there was a goaltender interference challenge at the end of the third period, rather. And even Gallant, the Rangers coach, had said at that point, that's 50-50. I knew it wasn't going to go our way. And if you have the coach saying that, you knew that it was probably a little less than 50-50, because every coach thinks it should go their way.
Because John Hines sticks by it. He said it again today. Look, we would do that again.
I saw that. I wasn't working that game. I actually did, and my opinion on that was that I disagreed with the ref's call on that one. That doesn't. I get it wrong all the time, and I don't. And I'm not trying to.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us do, right? Because
you can't ever get it.
But that's a problem, though, isn't it? I mean,
but how do you solve it? I agree with you, and I think the league has to look at it. But it's so subjective. And you know, I work with Brian Boucher. He's a goalie, so he always has it. You know, he's always defending the goalies, and that's great. We do want to protect our goalies, right? And across this league, they're often in very vulnerable positions, whatever it may be. But it is a, you know, I worked the Boston-Carolina game yesterday. Rod Brind'Amour challenged, and he said he would have bet his life on that.
Yep.
But in that one, I actually agreed that it wasn't a goaltender interference call. So I actually got that one right. Let's celebrate that.
All right.
That's a good one.
I feel like if you're like a baseball player, if you're hitting like 333, that's not bad. You know, like,
yeah, exactly. It's good.
Every time it happens, I tweet out 50-50. Yeah. Like that's what I did. I'm like, I feel this way, but it's going to be 50-50. I have no idea.
Right. And yeah, if I were the ref, I would say this. But I always have to tag it with, but it's a subjective call. And we don't even know what angles they're looking at, too, because sometimes the officials will have different angles than what we are seeing. Or, you know, whether it's an offside review, all these different things that I don't know if you guys find this, but with the team, we get the good angle of it after the officials make the call.
Right. We're not allowed to show it.
Right.
Until
and I'm like, that's, oh, that's what they were seeing. Okay, now I understand what they were doing. Goaltender interference, a little different because it is so subjective. But that was a huge turning point in the game for the Preds. There's no question about it. And that's tough when the officials make a direct. The best officials are the ones you don't notice. And unfortunately, through this playoffs, you asked about the trends. There are a lot of penalties being called in these playoffs. I understand that's where we are. It seems consistent from ref to ref, and it's in the league, and they're trying to get offense up, and they're trying to keep players safe. So there's reasons behind it. But special teams are a huge, huge factor, whereas a long time, or not even that long ago, it was, you know, playoffs were always played 5-on-5.
Speaking of offense being up, it also has led to a lot of lopsided games. How crazy is this? I think the numbers, I've seen some people put out actual numbers that support what it just feels like. There's not a lot of those real tight 1-1, 2-1 games that are going to double. There's the exception being, of course, New York-Pittsburgh in that first game, but a lot of games being decided by 4 or 5 goals, just routes.
Yeah, but then you look at every series except for this one, and they're all 2-2, right? They're all, the series are close.
Yes.
So it is interesting. You know, it'd be interesting to look at that stat and you know, what was L.A.? Edmonton was 4-0 last night, so that's different. But how many of the 7-4 games are, you know, 2 empty netters or 1 empty, you know, so you do have a little bit of that, too. Where
but Edmonton won 6-0, and then they turn around and lose 4-0. That's to your
point. Minnesota St. Louis has had 4 games like that, right?
Yeah.
Two each way.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and it is. It is bizarre when you have these momentum swings, and it's almost like you get a lead, and you don't have these crazy comebacks either.
Yeah.
AJ Malesko is with us from ESPN. When you watch Philip Forsberg in this series and he has not registered a point yet, 42 goals in the regular season, which is crazy to say that was second on the team to Matt Duchene. Do you feel like he's trying to do too much right now and that's affecting his game?
I think that's a fair assessment. I think that for any of these guys, you know, the opponents will key in on them, right? And when you've got a team as deep as Colorado, and especially when you're in Colorado and Bednar has the last change, he can look at Duchene, he can look at Forsberg, and he can look at their numbers and say, okay, these are the guys we have to neutralize. And if you, again, you have the depth both up front and the defense that Bednar can do that. Yes, in the playoffs, you need your big guys to show up. There's no question about it. And the big guys for Colorado have shown up. And I think for the Preds, if you look at Forsberg, he would probably be the first person to say that he needs to produce more than 0 points. Is he trying to do too much? Probably. Is he feeling the pressure? Probably. The big question is, how does he respond to that? What does he do tonight with their backs against the wall? And that's, you know, he's through in the past been able to score some clutch goals, come through big. So, you know, hopefully he'll show up tonight.
And then another guy, Tanner Janot, had such a great rookie year, has not really been a factor. Do you think that's just a product of the what he plays and the type of game that he plays, and maybe it's caught up with him from a fatigue standpoint, or what do you see from him?
It could be, and you look at any of these rookies coming in too. I mean, 82 games, that's a slog, right? And especially this season with the COVID breaks that you've had, and then down the stretch, all these teams, like, you guys played every other day for stretches.
2 months.
Right? I mean, it's nuts from March and April for what you guys had to do. So I think that for anybody, that's a grind. But I think especially for a rookie coming in and having to do that and travel around and go through different time changes. And, you know, it was a great run for a while. And then I do think the fatigue and more. I mean, these guys are in great shape. It's the mental fatigue. It's the grind of getting out there and then getting to this point. And then, you know, he comes into the season with no pressure, undrafted, comes in and suddenly he's this Tanner for, you know, Calder, or Janot for Calder. Everybody's talking about him as one of the great rookies. And then, you know, I think that's the pressure does start to build a little more, the expectations on him to score the big goals, to big hit that's going to turn the game around. I think that's been tough.
You said your friend request was pending with Hal. We've been putting out some of your comments during this interview. He's been liking them, so he really wants you to approve the friend request.
I think he's actually eating my lunch right now. That's what he's doing. I think it's all gone.
By the way, if you would like a lighted bracelet that they gave away Saturday night, Hal's got them because Talon went around and collected all of them.
Yeah.
He had about 500
up
bracelets.
And down. It's like the O-rings from the
80s. If you need any for the kit,
just watches.
You know
he's got them.
I'm sure Talon will give one to my son then. So he'll
give him multiples.
Yes, I'm sure.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Enjoy the game tonight.
I will.
AJ Molesko, ESPN, good stuff. Remember, AKA pending Hal's friend. Willie, tell everybody about QC Kinetics.
Yes, QC Kinetics. That is some good stuff. Of course, it's in our area and ready for you, really for the first time. It's just recently came in. You may have heard me talking about this at the end of 2021. But if you suffer, if you're new to it, here is the deal with QC Kinetics. Wake up without pain, okay? If you suffer from chronic joint pain, don't assume that the steroid shots and pain pills and surgery are the only options that are out there. That's where QC Kinetics comes in. Real, lasting, life-changing relief. They're the nation's leader in using biologic therapies to repair damaged tissue in your aching joints. The success rate is outstanding. People with knee, back pain, shoulders, hips, they're moving again, enjoying life, getting on the move with QC Kinetics. This is advanced, unique treatment. It uses natural biologic agents, mostly from your own body. These powerful, highly concentrated growth factors are put directly into your affected joint, and they soothe the inflammation, restore the damaged tissue. Regenerative with no surgery, no drugs, no downtime. So it's time to get a second opinion. Check this out. Call QC Kinetics and wake up to a life without pain. Get that consultation. This might be for you. Here's the phone number for QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Back here on the DDC, our show is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. Appreciate AJ Molesko for joining us here at the table. How about we give you an opportunity right now to win tickets to Game 4 here tonight at Bridgestone Arena. Game 4 tonight, 8:30 puck drop. Pre-game at 7:30 on these airwaves, 8 o'clock on the television side. But first, you have to answer this question to be a part of the madness here for Game 4 between Preds and Avs.
All right, Predators current events, very simple. If you've been following, you probably have heard this, but can you recall it? Give me the province and the hometown of Predators goaltender Connor Ingram. You must have the town and province. Ah. And yes, I am telling you he is Canadian.
Well,
okay. Do you know the town and the province?
I'm not sure anybody. A lot of people would have figured that out, though.
Hal Gill played at Providence.
He did.
I'm talking about a province.
Not Providence. Good hockey program.
We're talking about province.
He said,
I've been watching Ted Lasso. I saw the practice speech.
Is the new season out?
No, I'm catching up. I was late arrival. I'm in season two. It's awesome. I love it. I'm all in.
Believe.
On it. Yeah.
Paul McCann had the Believe lapel pin the other night. That was cool. It's good.
I don't think it'll take long to answer this because a diehard that needs tickets tonight is going to.
I don't think it's going to take long.
Or they're going to look it up.
So let's talk about, speaking of Hal Gill, I brought this up in postgame. And because Hal's been doing this for years now with us. And I've done a lot of postgame shows with him. And typically we've had all these, you know, we've had controversial calls before. I mean, give me a break. We've had goalie interference. We've had controversial calls. And Skillsy, who played in the league for 16 seasons, over 1,000 NHL games, typically has been the, you know, it's calls are calls. You got to learn to get past it, move on. Kind of the player's mentality, right? Like you just can't, you have to move on from it. You have to delete it. No matter how bad you think something is, you can't let it fester. You can't be dwelling on it. You have to move on as a player. And typically he's kind of had that approach. Kind of the same mindset, not really getting into all the the fray like I would want to do of let's talk about him. I mean, this is ridiculous. What a baloney call. That was terrible. He's like, you know, but look, you got to deal with it. Bad calls. Not on Saturday. This was a different approach by Hal. Hal was, and he was very adamant on the broadcast. Very adamant. That's another thing he typically doesn't do. But he was like, Pete, this is not a goal. This is not going to count. This is interference. And, of course, we all know how that played out. And it continued on in the postgame where he was very adamant that this call was missed. And as I brought up with AJ, go look at my tweets. Go look at my timeline. Every time this happens, I give an opinion. That's not going to count, or that one's going to count. And then I always follow it with, but it's 50-50. Like, I have no idea. Like, we're back to square one with goaltender interference. Like, I felt like we made strides to go in the right direction. Now we've reverted back to day one where we were constantly talking about goaltender interference. We can't figure out what the heck they're going
to
call.
That's the thing to me. I think, and you guys tell me if I'm off base, I feel like this season there were less controversial goaltender interference calls than in past years.
This season?
This season during the year.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that. I'm not willing to sign up for
not
that.
Not one. No. I didn't think it was a big topic at the All-Star game. I didn't think it was a big topic throughout. And maybe we'll bounce it off Elliot next time we talk to him. I feel like it was a lighter year than past years.
I don't know.
It really came to a head when they actually addressed it and adjusted the rule at the All-Star break. That was a couple seasons back. I don't remember exactly which one. It was
pre-pandemic. And then it calmed down. But I feel like we're back to it again.
So here's the thing. It's their job to be able to sift through all of the noise and all of the, hey, I don't know what goaltender interference is, because that's what everybody's going to say, and it's never going to be perfect. But if you stick to the principles, you should be able to sift through it. And that's the job of the video people for every team. That's the job for the league officials in the situation room, and it's the job for the refs when they get in the fire and they're under the gun and they get a challenge. So let's talk about that play. What happens immediately after that puck goes in? Arturi Lehkonen looks over the shoulder at the referee and is like, he's got the guilty look. It's like, oh, did he catch me? Did I do something? He had that look right away. So you know something's up.
Well, he made contact. I mean,
yes,
of course
he knows. So he's looking immediately. It's like when you think you traveled and you go up for the layup and you're like, well, I think I traveled. You look at the ref. Is he going to call it?
Unless it's the NBA and then they don't call that.
They don't
anymore.
Call that, right.
Yeah.
And now they really don't in college either. But
no.
Okay.
Right.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is the two referees huddle up, skate together over to the scorer's table, talk about it. They talk about it a little. What do you got? Was that? I got a little contact there. Are we calling it? Because they have the decision to make. They can wave it off on the ice. They can change it, even though they call it a goal. But it was kind of a fishy. It was like it wasn't well, like sometimes the ref looks and he gives it a goal
or no goal.
It's in or a no goal. When that's what they did in Colorado in game two. He waved
adamant.
It off immediately.
Very adamant.
I got goalie interference. Boom, and then it's up to them to challenge. This was a wishy-washy, okay, let's talk about it. Let's skate over. Okay, it's a goal. And they knew we're going to throw it into the laps of the Predators to challenge this.
Okay.
Because we got something up here.
Let's pause there because I think this is a good stopping point because I definitely want to weigh in on this and I want us to pick it up on the other side. Congratulations to Ethan. Ethan is our Game 4 winner because Ethan told Max Herz back at our Hillside Medical Game Studio – the answer was?
Imperial Saskatchewan. Population?
Imperial Saskatchewan.
360.
That's 360.
360.
Not 360,000.
And I liked Mace's line the other night. There's 358 there tonight because his parents were there.
All right, so good job, Ethan. The lines blew up. Ethan, enjoy game four. Thanks for listening. We'll pick up the discussion on the other side here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville's own Big Machine Distillery wants to send you to the inaugural Tennessee Whiskey Trail Experience to celebrate International Tennessee Whiskey Day. That'll be May 21st. Skillsy, are you listening? That'll be at Nissan Stadium. Text WHISKEY right now. Text WHISKEY to 615-737-1025 to enter for a pair of tickets. That sounds like fun.
That does sound like fun. I'm here for it.
You talk. I'm going to text Whiskey.
Okay.
All right. So
I don't know if you're eligible, but okay. You know, that's cool.
So we're talking about the critical call in the game. And look, if that challenge is won by the Predators, the score remains 3-3, do they go on and win that game? I don't know. They have, you know, Colorado has played so well, they just as well could have maybe gone on and won the game anyway. But Nashville being the underdog, playing without their Vezina goalie finalist, and Kevin Weeks has reported that that's happening. We'll see if he's right. And I think that will be announced tomorrow. You know, they're going to need a couple breaks.
Yeah.
Okay? They need a break in the game. So they challenged the play. We talked about it. Lehkonen has a guilty look. The referees, they don't give an emphatic call. They call a goal, but they huddle immediately. They skate over together. They discuss it. Now it's going to be reviewed. So the whole thing of, hey, I don't know what it is or what isn't the goaltender interference, there are some principles that they try to nail down every time. And that's what Lawrence Filoni, Andrew Milosh, and the video guys go by when they decide, are we challenging or not? Sometimes it's a tough call, and usually if you're not sure and the goal, it's a good goal on the ice, you're not going to challenge because you know it's double jeopardy, right? You lose the challenge, you go down a man. This one was clear enough to them that they would challenge 10 times out of 10. In fact, I've been told that other people from other teams have kind of reinforced in the aftermath of this, yeah, I absolutely would have challenged that. You had Don Koharski on the TBS broadcast, the official, who the rules guy, the former longtime referee, said that's goalie interference.
The TV ref, as I like to call
it. The TV ref.
Yep.
Right, the Mike Pereira of the NHL. So here's the things that you look for. Does Mikhail Granlund drive him into the goalie? Because if he does, then there's nothing Lehkonen can do about it, and it's a good goal. Granlund's arms are in by his body. He's got to defend him. He can't just let him go, so he's got to defend, but he can't push him in. I don't believe he pushes him in, and that's what they came
down to.
First
of all, you can be touching him and not push somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the other key point is, where does the contact take place?
I could have my hands all over Chase like people do on Saturday nights in downtown Nashville, but not be pushing him.
Right.
I'm retired, remember?
So what do you look for? You look for a pushing motion with his stick.
Yep.
You look for, where are his arms? Are they extended or are they down by his body? He knows he can't push him in. So he's on him without pushing him. I think that's where they missed the boat, is they fell back on that. I just don't see that that's the call there. And, of course, the blue ice versus the white ice is the other thing to look for. Connor Ingram was at the top of the crease. His skates are straddling the line. So part of his skate is in the white ice. Part of it is in the blue ice. But he's entitled to the blue ice. The contact takes place right on the borderline. It starts in the white, and it drives it way back into the blue ice. So to me, that's classic goaltender interference. So once again, don't go by what I say, but I think the consensus around was not a 50-50. It was a lot more leaning heavily towards that's goalie interference. But it's weird because we were talking to AJ about it. In the big picture, there's been a lot of challenges, and it's been mystifying because it doesn't look consistent sometimes. So you just wonder, what is the process? It's different people. The key thing is the referees still control the final call. They have to overrule themselves. It's not taken out of their hands like a lot of people think it should be.
And I think that's the problem.
A lot of people think it should be.
No, I think it should be. I mean, I think that there should be a, you know, the XFL
because
experimented with a sky judge.
They
thing.
Don't
there
want
be,
to. Yeah. I mean, think about it. They've got.
They don't
motivation.
Want to relinquish control.
Yes.
They don't want to relinquish control that they have.
But at the end of the day, because I look at it like this, you know, they were hesitating on, and they huddled up. Okay, is it a good goal? Of what the actual call on the ice is. So sometimes that happens. Of they, you know, they don't get to the. that they make one call on the ice because it's going to ultimately work in their favor and make them look better. That's why I think it should be a third party that ultimately makes the decision. That it goes back to Toronto. Toronto looks at it, and they just say no. You know, because here's the other thing, too. On some of these calls, the ref's looking at an iPad, which is tiny compared to what they have in the war room. I mean, there are little things that you can see if you're on a bigger screen.
It's logical. That's if not, we'd all have little tiny TVs in our house. We wouldn't have a big screen TV.
Right. I think one of the problems that I have is, one, I don't blame the refs for, with the naked eye, being able to definitively make a call, because this game goes so fast. goes so fast. Sorry. Hal is distracting us.
Shenanigans.
But that's why you have replay. That's why you have challenges. That's why you have replay. That's why you have video. So I don't fault them for that. But I just, what I'm mystified at is how many times they go look at it, and we all have an opinion that's pretty, it feels like one-sided.
Yeah.
And yet they can look at it and come back and say, no.
And this is the hard thing, there's so much riding. There's so much riding on the call because you're risking a penalty. But remember, early years, all you were doing was risking your timeout. So it was a lot easier for the coach to say, yeah, challenge that, man. That was interference. You don't have to put any thought into it. Oh, big deal. I lose my one timeout. That's not that big of a penalty. But when you risk what the Predators had to risk, you really have to do it. That's why they educate themselves so much on, yes, that is by definition interference, or else we wouldn't have challenged that.
Tell me what you think of this. Challenges are acceptable with a penalty in the regular season. Challenges are acceptable in the playoffs. No penalties in the playoffs.
No, I don't think so.
I don't like that. But
why?
This was another option that was proposed to me.
Because aren't you again? Like what happened? Look,
get unlimited challenges.
You're pretty much toast.
Or you still just get the one challenge.
Just get it right.
You still get only one challenge, though.
Yeah, but just get it right. I mean, maybe
it's interesting.
When it happens the way it did on Saturday, I don't want to say game over, but it changed the whole complexion of the game.
It was a tie game. Too much to overcome on that day.
Yeah. I would also,
and especially with Ingram, he made his little made his little error there behind the net. He misplayed it. He got tangled. He tried to put it up along the boards, and it went right out in front. That was a tough bang-bang. All of a sudden, you go from Paul McCann is still announcing the goal, getting the crowd riled up. They've tied the game, and then, boom, you have that. And the next thing you know, it's 5-3.
Yeah.
You know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes in real time later. This was what proposed to me. What do you guys think of this? That a referee can initiate his own challenge.
Yeah. Like,
if he deems, hey, that's really close. Look, I'm not going to make you guys have to challenge this because there's a lot of riding on it. That one is gray area for me. Let's go look at it.
Then just get rid of challenges and just go to the video.
Well, I don't know about
that. And get it right.
Well, hang on.
In the playoffs.
I have another thing I would do.
In the playoffs.
I have another thing that I would do.
Well, let's do that on the other side. Willie, you're going to tell everybody first about Lee Company.
All right, let's talk Lee Company. Big sponsor. Nashville Predators hockey. It's going to be fun tonight. You've got all kinds of coverage coming on 102.5 The Game, and Lee Company will be a big sponsor of it. They're also here at Bridgestone Arena all over the place. When you walk into Smashville, you'll see their display. And look, the temperature is getting warmer. It's going to be into the 90s, and that's why if you're a member of their home maintenance plan, you know you're covered, because they have the year-round checkups. They have annual checkups of your air conditioning unit. So if you're on the maintenance plan, you've probably already had your air conditioning unit checked by Lee Company. In the fall, when the weather starts to get cold, they have that annual checkup of your heating unit, plus the plumbing and electric systems they check as well once a year. That's the home maintenance plan. And so that's how you know you're on top of things and you're going to be okay, and your systems at home are going to be running properly. And if and when repairs need to be made over the long period, you get discounts on those repairs. So ask Lee Company about their home maintenance plan and all the other services they have with home renovation, general maintenance at home or at work, and everything else. LeeCompany.com is the website, and you can give them a call at 615-567-1000 for Lee Company.
All right. back here on the DDC, here at Pete and Terry Stafford. Don't.
Panic.
Now my car is going off in the garage.
We're bringing the passion. Thank
all
you.
All right. All right. Skillsy and AJ leaving the building. All right, so you were going to get into the point.
Yeah.
Of should it be taken out of the challenges? See, I don't think you can deviate too far
no.
from what you do in the regular season. So what's
why
your proposal?
Why can't they do something similar to what the NFL does? And that is back in the war room, they look at every scoring play. In the NFL, you look at every scoring play.
Yeah, that's essentially what
that's
was proposed
to That's what I've been saying,
yeah.
and Willie's been shooting it down. He's like, nah.
No, I think they need to do that. I don't see why they're not already doing that. I mean, I think that, to me, for a sport like hockey, would be a pretty simple thing to do. And it could be even that they look at it, and if it's not as clear, then you buzz the score table and say, hey, hang on. We need a little longer on this one. But then there's some that are very cut and dry, obviously. Good goal.
Right.
And that's it.
And you do have that principle for – remember in the Stanley Cup final, there was a goal that the Predators scored. I think it might have been Freddie Gaudreau, where the puck went across the line, but they didn't see it right away. Play
yeah.
continued.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the horn blew.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, wait a minute. And the place,
I do remember
the place
that.
Went nuts because the war room – it's the situation room.
Sure.
Is that what you're supposed to call it? The situation room saw the video, and so they buzzed the scorer's table and said, hit the horn. That's a good goal. We don't need to be playing right now because all of this is going to be wiped away because
right.
that puck went in. So essentially you do have that, but it's just it's a tough thing when we're talking about interference, just like pass interference in football. It's very, very difficult to have a clear cut.
Well, the biggest clear cut issue is – how in the world do you – how can you tell on video unless it's really, really blatant? Like, Borowiecki pushing a player into Ingram and over top of them is blatant. Like, that
– yeah.
That is easy to see. Like, you video, naked eye, it's easy to see. When there is – when you say there's contact, well, every play driving to the net is going to have contact – it doesn't mean that you're pushing. So how can you tell from video, this is not just the Predators game, any of these instances, that player is the reason that there was contact made, that they are the reason. They drove that person that was driving to the net into the goaltender, into your goaltender. How do you tell that on video? Just because they're touching them? Again, you can touch somebody without pushing them.
I'm not touching you.
How can you tell with video that Granlund is responsible for the contact that was made? That's the problem
yes.
that I have. You are now, assuming. You're assuming. You cannot tell. Like, to me, like, it has to be. But, like, if you do, we're on radio, and you see Granlund with his left hand.
Right.
He's got his left hand draped around him, and then all of a sudden you kind of see, like, a motion
right.
where he just is thrust into, like, that's obvious,
yes.
right? That's But how do you, in that play, or those plays, how can you determine through video that person is responsible for that,
right.
so, for the opposition going into your goaltender?
So we have a couple different things we're talking about. Number one, are we okay with the system? The thing about the system is when you have to risk going on the penalty kill if you lose, what is that designed to do? It's designed to cut down the amount of challenges. Early on, it was sort of out of control when all you had to risk was the timeout. So at the end of the day, I'm still okay with the system as it is. I don't think I would go further. I think it complicates things too much. But it is a big risk. But that all more, I think you look at the video coaches, they know when to challenge and when it's on the line, right? It's John Hines' call, but the video, he's trusting the video guy to say, look, I'm telling you, by definition, we study these things all the
yeah.
time. That's interference. There are always going to be some that are 5 or 50-50, right? That actually are. If you had a pool of 10 people, experts looking at it, you might have one or two that's deadlocked 5-5. And I don't think you can ever avoid that. This one, to me, was not a 5-5. This one was, I think, way leaning towards 10-0. I don't know if it's 10-0, but that's, like you were saying, I just think this one was easier to see than some. So that was a tough call.
That's why I say, and it sounds like you agree with me, Darren, that you take it, because if the ref is going to, if it's ultimately the official, the on-ice official making the call, you know, there are going to be some that, like, they don't want to, they want to get it right, but they're also not going to say that they're wrong.
That's
at the same
it.
Time.
There's so human element.
You take it out of their
hands.
Wait,
I think I saw it right. Yeah, I'm right.
Take it out of their hands, and you go to the situation room, and if you if you are looking at every scoring play, like they technically should be doing, but and you take the challenge element out of it, then I think you get more of these calls right. Because you're having a third party look.
You know, look, we're not saying this changes game three, three's outcome. We're just simply discussing what we believe is becoming an issue again in the National Hockey League. That's it. It's clear to see if you've been watching these playoff games.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of controversy when it comes to goaltender interference. And so we're probably setting the table up for next season. And maybe with Elliot Friedman and others that we talked to, like, okay, are we back to square one on this? So that's the reason that we're talking about. We thought it was a bad call. And, again, but does it guarantee that it would have changed the outcome of Game 3? That will do it for our coverage here today live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Tonight, Game 4, 8:30 puck drop, 7:30 pregame, everything right here on these airwaves, 8 o'clock over on the Bally Sports side on television. That will do it for us. We'll have plenty to discuss tomorrow. Starting at 10 o'clock. We'll see you then.